Okay then, everyone. I'm going to call this meeting to order. We're going to, we have one substitution today. We have MHA Din for MHA Brown. We don't have any unaffiliated members. We can take a break if you'd like one, or we can just go through to hopefully cut down on how long we'll be here. Just a note to everyone that always identify yourself if you're speaking and wait for the tally light each time. And if you wave, the tally light will come on. Consistent with protocols, we're asking that masks be worn in the chamber by employees unless they are speaking. It's discretionary for members. But if you're not feeling well and this goes on longer, you can certainly take your mask down and breathe, because we know what that's like here in the House. Members and officials are reminded not to make any adjustments to their chairs. Not the chair, but to the chairs, because they're set for us. But I mean, when I'm in the House, I'm fooling around mine all the time, up and down. But water coolers on each end of the House, feel free to. We have glasses provided, so you can use glasses if you don't have your bottle or your cooler with you. To start the process, we just go through the identification of committee members. The minister will speak. The committee will have to move minutes, and then the clerk will call the first subhead. We ask the chair. I'll ask the committee to identify themselves. I'll ask then the minister identifies departmental staff, which you can do right away. The chair brings the minutes of the previous meeting forward, and that's basically where we go with that. So we'll start. First, I will ask the members of the committee and any staff attending to introduce themselves along with the minister. You can do that too as well. Okay. So we'll start.
Hello, I'm Sarah Studley, Minister of Digital Government and Service NL and MHA for Mount Sio.
Okay. I'm Sean Dutton, Deputy Minister of the Department.
Bonnie Steele, Departmental Controller.
Gail Boland, Assistant Deputy Minister of Digital Government and Services.
Angelica Hill, Executive Assistant to the Minister.
Kathy Dix-Payton, Director of Communications.
Okay, so we'll start over here.
My own just go MHA of District of Fairland.
Megan Winter, Researcher with the Official Opposition Caucus.
Jim Din, MHA for St. John's Center.
Stephen Kent, Sessional Support for the Third Party Office.
Ben Pollard, Political Staffer, Government Members Office.
Ryan Moore, MHA, Bayford, Green Bay.
Lucy Stoyles, MHA, Mount Pearl North.
Okay, Minister, I'm going to give you the floor, and you have 15 minutes to speak, and then we'll...
So, yeah, I'm going to read the subheads first.
Yeah, okay, you can go ahead and read the subheads.
Executive and Support Services, 1.1.01 to 1.2.03.
Okay, thank you everyone for joining us. This is our very hardworking team in Digital Government Service NL, and also like just to mention Scott Jones is our Assistant Deputy Minister for Regulatory Affairs, but he couldn't be here today, but you know, our Deputy Minister Dutton certainly has all that information as well. So I'd also like to thank the members who've joined us today. I do personally think estimates is a very important process where we, you know, it's very important, I think, to go through the budget line by line. So I certainly am very happy to be here and answer any questions that anyone has. We have already done the staff introductions. So just to give you an overview, or anyone watching or listening of our department, so we do all the licensing and inspections related to public health. We do public safety, environmental protection inspections, provision of vital documents. We regulate the health and safety of employees in the workplace with occupational health and safety, and the safeguards, and we safeguard consumer interests. We have motor registration division that gets a lot of media attention. So we do driver testing, driver's licenses, vehicle registrations, and photo ID cards. We are responsible for safety on our roadways, on public highways, and we do that through a number of areas. And I guess originally, or most recently, our department was created with the goal of consolidating licensing, permitting, inspecting, and regulatory functions within government, and then, where possible, provide a single window access to the public for those services. So we have over 150 pieces of legislation, standards, and codes of practice, which give us that authority. And we also have a lot of memorandums of understanding with other departments. So, for example, with health, when we enforce or do inspections around environmental protection, for example, the legislation and regulations that we're enforcing belong in other departments. Yeah. So there's a lot of cross-departmental work that we do. So we have a net budget of just over $27 million. And so in addition to the $8.3 million that's in our estimates, there's also $111.4 million that does not show up on our estimates, but that goes right into general revenue. And so, you know, a big part of that is from MRD. When you pay your now $90 for renew your license, that does not show up in our estimates. That goes right into general revenues. You know, we also get revenue from issuer fees, registry of deeds, and, like I mentioned, motor registration fees. So I'd just like to highlight some changes since our last estimates in our department. So we merged our divisions of Consumer Affairs and Financial Services Regulation into a single division. And we also received the transfer of income support collections to our department from Immigration, Population Growth and Skills. So I believe we have now most of the collections functions across government. I think there's still a few left to come in, but we now hold all the collection, most of the collections. And we kind of brought Consumer Affairs and Financial Services Regulations together. We got some efficiencies from that, so happy to chat about that as we go. And obviously, digital is a very important part of our department. And I am also responsible for the Office of the Chief Information Officer, which we discussed in committee recently, or two nights ago, maybe. And obviously, it's very important that we increase the number of online services available to the public, and we... Digital Government Service and NOCIO work with all departments to, you know, increase the number of services available online. So obviously we were impacted by COVID-19, as were most departments. We assisted other departments with their COVID, online application forms and that kind of stuff. MyGovNL, which I know is not at its best at the moment. We're happy to talk about that further. So we also oversee occupational health and safety, which is a huge priority for our department, and the enforcement of that. So we have legislation, codes, and standards for health and safety working conditions, and the costs of all of that are recovered from Workplace NL, so there's offsetting revenue for all expenditures from occupational health and safety. And we also are responsible for the Office of French Services, and I'm Minister responsible for Francophone Affairs. And so we do French language training and translation services to all the provincial government. And then we're also responsible for the Queen's Printer, which does most or all of the printing for the provincial government and some of the agencies, boards, and commissions as needed. And so I think, you know, most people in the province would interact with Digital Government Service NL at least yearly. And so, you know, we're always looking to try and make that experience with residents easier and better and more efficient. And so I guess that concludes my remarks, and happy to answer any questions on anything that my department, sometimes referred to as the Lynn Trap of Government, covers. Thank you.
Okay, just before MHA O'Driscoll speaks or asks questions, I need a mover for the minutes of April 11, 2022. Okay. Moved by MHA War. So now we'll continue. So MHA O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Chair. Certainly a pleasure to be here again this evening or this afternoon and on a Friday afternoon. And thank you all for being here. And I'm sure you do a great job for the minister and all the work you do. And I'd like to say that I know how much work is, but I don't. I'm sure there's a tremendous amount of work, but I certainly do appreciate it. First of all, I'll start off. Can we get a copy of the minister's briefing binder?
Yeah, we have extra copies here, and you can walk away with one when we're done.
Yeah, okay, perfect. And I've just got some general questions first, and then I'll get into what I need to be. Is the attrition plan still being followed? And if so, what are the changes for last year and this year?
So we met our attrition target for last year, and we do not have an attrition target for the upcoming year.
Okay. How many people are employed in the department?
Let's see. So we have a grand total of 400. So at the moment we have 391 filled positions in digital governance service and L. Feel free to interrupt or add to what I'm saying at any time, Tim. Thank you.
How many retirements occurred in the last year?
We had 18 retirements in the last year.
Okay. How many vacancies are not filled in that department?
We have 71 vacancies.
Okay. So you have a chance to fill them this year and be able to fill them, I guess?
A lot of them are kind of rolling, you know. So, for example, at MRD, we have a lot of people that come in, and a lot of people come right in, and then they apply for other internal jobs in government. So it's like a steady stream of people that we train. Unfortunately, we'd love to keep them longer. It is a challenging work environment. So just for example, of the 71, 25 of those are in MRD, and, you know, we kind of need more just because so many flow through MRD. And then, for example, we have highway enforcement officers, and they keep moving around the province, and it's a lot of movement, I would say, of roles within the provincial government.
Well, I'm sure, people serving on the front counter are not easy to keep people there in the service industry, so I totally understand that dealing with public. So,
yep.
Have any positions been eliminated? And if so, what are they?
I'm not aware of any positions officially eliminated. We do have positions that we may not need to fill, or may not, maybe a lower priority to fill at any given time. I don't know if you want to expand on that.
Sure. It's Sean Dutton. I'm going to take this out while I'm talking. The minister alluded to restructuring that took place in the consumer affairs and financial services area. So we've had some trade-offs. So as opposed to eliminating positions, we've reprioritized some of them, and there's some changes in classification. So we're going through the classification process now on those where the duties have changed a little bit. But I guess in the big picture, we had a director for each division and two managers in one. And at the end of the process, we'd have one director and three managers, so it would be slightly cheaper in terms of the management complement. And some of the staff positions have moved around, so we've used some of the resources to focus particularly on residential tenancies as an area where we want to increase our staff complement to help meet the service demand. And in motor registration, we've looked at our salary plan, and we're focused on particularly having sufficient number of staff for things like the call taking and that sort of thing. So we've made some adjustments in the overall plan in that respect as well.
So I guess in that transition, did you have any layoffs that occurred in the department now with that last year? With the combined, when you done all that, was there any layoffs that occurred?
No.
No.
Okay, no.
Good. All right. How many new hires took place last year?
Sarah Studley, we had 20 new hires.
Okay. How many contractual and short-term employers are in your department?
We don't have any contractors, as far as I'm aware. We do have 12, people who have come in on short contracts.
And how many vacancies in your department that have been vacant for over 6 months or longer? You know, have that?
I don't have that information on hand. I don't know if anyone else. No. We can certainly provide
that. Yeah. And if some of these have to go back and get us an answer, then that's fine. That's okay. That's not just to say that, that's all. Did your department receive any funds from the COVID contingency fund? And if so, what for?
I'm not aware of any funds that we've received from the COVID contingency fund.
No, you're normally collecting. Pardon? You're normally collecting money.
Yes, I mean, the federal government funded the VaxPass, yeah. Which was kind of, we talked about that in OCIL, but yeah. there's no provincial government contingency funding, no.
Okay, I'm going to move on to under section
1.2.01.
1.2.01. Now I got some questions, I'll go back to
perfect,
later.
Perfect, thank you. Yeah.
Under salaries, the budget for salaries increased to 1.4 million.
Yep. So, in terms of salaries under executive support, we've had kind of a transitional deputy minister position situation where we were sharing Deputy Minister Dutton for part of the year. So now we have Sean as a full-time deputy minister, and so that I guess aligned. Considering then other vacancies throughout the year is why we need the extra budget.
Okay, under employee benefits went over budget by 87,200, was budget 181 last year.
Yep.
Was spent, I believe that in before employee benefits went over budget. Could you please provide some detail? Is the base budget being increased because we've had overspending?
Sure. So this is all directly related to workers' compensation charges. So we had higher than anticipated workers' compensation charges during the year, which is why it went up. And then it's going up a bit again because we anticipate higher than what we had budgeted in 2021, 2022. So that is all related to workers' compensation charges.
Okay. Under revenue, provincial, can you outline there's 104,100 less received than anticipated?
So when I mentioned occupational health and safety, that is 100% recovered from Workplace NL. And so this is, as we kind of spend more time on occupational health and safety, we get more revenue from them for that. So we had less time, I guess, to bill back for occupational health and safety related expenditures.
Okay. Under 1.2.02. Can you explain why the professional services are included here? Additionally, there's significant savings last year, and how was that achieved?
Professional services. Okay, so we're at 1.2. So this is the French language services.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So I guess for COVID and stuff, we had fewer demand for French translation. So we have an agreement with the federal government, and so we do some translation because we have 3 full-time French staff. We do some translation in-house, and for bigger projects, or if we don't have capacity, we use the federal government, and we have an agreement with them, and they provide the remaining French translation services. So we did not need as much French translation services in the past year, which is why we didn't spend as much.
Okay. Under 1.2.03, under administrative support, under purchase services, can you detail what purchase services fall in this line item, what accounts for the variance?
So we're responsible for vital statistics, and there's a federal government project called the Death Registration Project, which is meant to have an automatic way for funeral homes that they would go in to a website, they would put in that someone's passed away, and then that information is connected with government and health and funeral and the federal government so that everyone knows that there's been this death, and that so we're trying to reduce paperwork, and we're the first province to do this with the federal government. So that is why there is an increase, and the we carried forward some of the money. So essentially we won't receive any more of the death registration money from the federal government because the project is nearing completion.
Okay. Under revenue federal, can you provide some insight as to where that $30,000 came from?
So that is from the federal government for the death registration project.
Okay. How far are we going on this one? What section? Two. Just make sure I'm not going ahead of you, that's all. 2.1.01.
Okay, yep.
Yeah. Or is that? No, okay. That's okay. The next section. Okay, well, that's it for this section.
Okay,
thank you. Perfect. That's what I was asking for. So sure.
Okay,
until you go to the next section.
Yeah, okay, thank you. MHA Dean?
Chair, The Green Report recommended some form of privatization for motor vehicles and registry of deeds in a best and final offer, RFP, to Rothschild, PwC, and Deloitte from the October last year. The government asked the bidders to devise a plan to privatize provincial registries along with four other entities. The proposed completion date for the monetization of the provincial registries was November 2022, this year coming. What contact has your department had with Rothschild as it begins preparation to monetize or sell off provincial assets? And what is the plan for provincial registries, and what work has been undertaken so far to prepare it for privatization?
Sarah Studley. So I can't say we have received work from Rothschild in terms of cabinet documents, in terms of, you know, potentially looking at the value of our registries. We have received that information from the cabinet context. And we are currently evaluating the information that has been provided, and that's the stage we're in right now.
Okay, so you have got, you've got their documents, and you're now as to what they consider the value of the of your services would be, correct? And you're evaluating what they put down there.
We're evaluating what they've given us in terms of registries.
Okay, in registries, as to whether they're, I guess what you're looking at is whether their evaluation is correct or not, or.
We're reviewing the documents they provided in terms of the scope of the project in relation to registries.
Okay. So how is the transition progressing to increase the number of services delivered online by 75% this year? And what kinds of savings are these measures expected to bring to the department, and have they in fact materialized?
Sure. Thank you. I'd be very pleased to talk about all the new online services that we've created. So residents can now apply for a charitable lottery license online. So a lot of this, and I think as we talked earlier, like we amalgamated two divisions within our department, which then freed up, which created, I think, a new leadership, got rid of a leadership position, added a new lower level leadership position, but then also allowed us to hire a new residential tenancies adjudicator. So we kind of moved resources around our department. So, you know, we got you can apply for a charitable lottery license online. We launched a new ability to tell motor registration if you're transferring a vehicle online, because before that was our longest appointment. It was like 40 minutes to transfer a vehicle if you went in person, or, you know, if you called and there was a lot of paperwork you had to mail in or drop off or fax. So now you can tell us about transferring a vehicle online. That was a big priority for us, and that was launched last September, October. So you can now do your MRD permit test online. You can do your wood cutting. And this is, I guess, where we are working with other departments to have other departments' functionality online. You get your wood cutting permit. Your MCP renewal for dependents was a new, very highly used service. As part of the COVID-19 Vax Pass, you could get your vaccination record. We worked with IPGS on their provincial nominee program application. In terms of the COVID-19 government programs, there was the Small Business Assistance Program application, the Tourism Hospitality Support Program application. Then more focused on our department, we obviously have all the licensing for financial services, so like mortgage brokers, all that stuff. So we there's a new online application process for more, and the yearly renewal for mortgage brokers, real estate salespeople, prepaid funeral sales licenses. You apply for a license, renew your license, insurance broker licenses, and any of those that you need to renew, you can do that online. We also work with a lot of electrical contractors and electricians, so you can now apply for your commercial electrical permit online, your electrical permit extension, your non-commercial electrical permit, and then renew your contractor electrical permit online. So I guess some of this is, there is efficiency for us. It's also making things easier for the contractors. They don't have to fill out paperwork. And then there's also a data quality benefit because they put it in. There's no one has to retype it, that kind of stuff. So those are recently the new online services that we've put up.
Any savings so far?
So I guess the new, the amalgamation of the departments within our Digital Government Service NL, Doing this allowed us to move, you know, and the online, moving more things online facilitated that. Now, there's still some wrinkles in our current processes. You know, we physically relocated people, so that team has also moved to the Mount Pearl office. So I think there's still some, you know, normalizing, I guess, going on. But we were able to hire a new residential tenancies adjudicator, so we're going to have four soon. We have three at the moment. I can't tell you kind of a number of yeah, sure, Sean, yep.
It's Sean. I guess I could add that, I mean, in terms of savings, there's been no sort of correlating reduction in our human resource budget other than the attrition targets that we had to meet in past years. And again, this digitization target of 75%, that's been more than exceeded. And as a result of that, we have more of the staff being focused on higher priority work and less of the back office function. So in motor registration, as an example, we don't have people in the back room stapling the sticker onto the letter to stuff it in the envelope anymore, because that's done print on demand. And so those staff are able to focus on higher priority work like the call taking and counter service and other functions of the division.
So is the move to digitization and also, I guess, a part of a government strategy to make it more, the services more attractive to private capital and to make it easier to privatize them?
So I'll say for myself, that is absolutely not a consideration. We are trying to make things easier for residents to deal with government and trying to make government more efficient. And, you know, government should be easy for people to deal with. They, you know, we should have less red tape. It should, you know, so I would strongly add that that is not at all what we've thought about.
And if your department is eventually, or if motor vehicle registration is eventually privatized, would the would the system that you've set up, would that go with it, be part of the deal, or would they, any company, be responsible, more or less have to come up with their own data management system?
All that is to be determined.
Yeah. And I would guess that's part of what you're evaluating, too.
Well, I guess just for everyone and for just for those who don't know, the systems, a lot of the IT systems that we have are very old. Mm-hmm. So our MRD system is very old. It's on a mainframe, which limits our ability to do new things, like, for example, have a plate-to-owner system rather than a plate-to-vehicle system like we have. And so we have a big, long list of new things we'd like to do, like having electric vehicle plates. And, you know, we get requests all the time for new license plates from organizations. And so we're not able to move as fast as we'd like because our technology is not as slow. So I guess regardless of what we do, we will need to upgrade our technology as well. So that's another consideration.
Thank you. What's the update on a transition from a plate-to-vehicle to a plate-to-owner system when it comes to...
So we have not been able to do that with our current system. So, you know, we need to invest in a new system prior to that, unfortunately.
Thank you. And what is the status of the shared services approach to back office functions of government, such as financial administration, human resources, IT, and so on and so forth? And has there been any progress in implementing the policy and any savings?
Yeah. So the big thing that we've had progress on recently is collections. So we've brought collections, I guess we brought it in from a few areas of government and now sits in Digital Government and Service NL. Like I mentioned in my opening statement, we recently just brought in collections for IPGS. And I guess from an IT perspective, so, you know, OCIO does have, you know, is essentially a core shared service. We're now looking at how the IT and digital landscapes look when you consider, for example, the NLESD or NILCHI. I think NILCHI's been announced that it's coming into government. So what does digital look like in IT with NILCHI coming in and any other organization? But I think cybersecurity is also a relevant discussion here, where government spends, you know, a lot of money on cybersecurity. And we have lots of agencies, boards, and commissions who may not have the expertise or financial means to spend any money or time or knowledge on cybersecurity. And given the lack of cybersecurity experts in Newfoundland and Labrador, and the fact that, you know, I think it makes sense for provincial government to take more of these organizations under its wing from an IT perspective. For the, you know, even for the simple, pure reason of protecting the information that we all have. So that would be my next big priority.
Okay, thank you. MHA O'Driscoll.
We're going on to the next one. No, that's the date for that section, I think.
Oh, I thought you might have had more.
No, I'm good on that section.
Are you good as well, MHA?
Just a few more, Chair. Okay. And are there any pilot projects underway for introducing new safety measures in school buses, such as camera technology, seat belts, automatic emergency braking?
Okay, just one second. Oh, I used to have something on this. So we are working, I guess, with the Canadian organization. Sean, I don't know if you want to talk about school buses. Okay. Thanks, Sean.
It's Sean. In terms of seatbelts on buses, there was an evaluation done through the Council of Ministers of Transportation and Highway Safety. They completed that report, and it's online at comt.ca. For anyone who wants to read it. I think you also were asking about the braking. I don't have any specific information on the braking. I mean, the standards of manufacture of school buses is a federal matter. Transport Canada regulates that. And I'm sorry, what was the third item you mentioned?
There was seat belts, camera technologies,
Okay, so in terms of cameras, so legislation has been passed and regulations published around using image capture technology for highway enforcement, the regulations have been published in the Gazette. We've formed an interdepartmental committee. Education is one of a number of departments that would be involved, along with justice and transportation. And so we're evaluating the options on deployment of cameras for strong enforcement around school buses, school zones, highway construction sites, and for general highway traffic enforcement by law enforcement offices. So they will be reporting back to government later this year, and then that'll inform next year's budget process.
And that would include cameras in the school buses. That's what I was specifically asking about.
We don't have any involvement in our department in cameras on school buses if it's for the behavior of the children. I think what I'm talking about is the use for ensuring that people are not illegally passing a school bus. Yeah.
What policies have been put in place over the past year to help streamline the client experience for businesses at digital services?
So I guess in terms of, we've done more of the kind of online processing and applications and renewals rather than, I guess, from a policy perspective. I'll mention them. So, for example, you can now apply and renew your mortgage broker license online, real estate broker, real estate salesperson, prepaid funeral sales license, insurance broker licenses, financial services licenses, applications and renewals. And then from an electrician perspective, anyone applying for an electrical permit, extending an electrical permit, a non-commercial electrical permit, or a contractor electrical certificate, renewing or applying for, all that can happen online.
Thank you. When can we expect amendments to the Buildings Accessibility Act to be introduced in the House?
So Sarah Studley, the Building Accessibility Advisory Board gave us their recommendations, and we did consultations on those. I think I did three or four virtual consultations with a range of stakeholders. And then the What We Heard document is just recently published on our website, so I encourage anyone who's interested to go check that out. We are working now on taking those, the information we heard, as well as the recommendations of the Building Accessibility Advisory Board, and we'll be putting together draft legislation that has to go through the process. I have said, I would ideally target the upcoming fall sitting, but I'm not sure how confident I am in that, but that's my ideal target at the moment.
Thank you. Is there a system in place now where insurance companies can tell the department when someone has canceled his or her car insurance policy?
So the insurance validation project is in its final stages. I don't know, do you have a, this, sorry.
If you don't mind me,
Gail Boland. Yes, so we've been working with IBC, the Insurance Bureau of Canada, as well as all of our insurers to implement a real-time validation process. We actually, this past fall, had to make some more amendments to our legislation to help facilitate the authorities required to demand the information being reported to the Registrar of Motor Vehicles. So we're working with IBC, like I said, and the OCIO to develop the systems required. And we are aiming for this fall to have that process in place.
Thank you. 1.2.02, Francophone Affairs. Are there any particular efforts underway to expand the availability of French services to the public, either in the public or the private sector?
Thank you. So I have to say I've had an excellent relationship with the TTFNL. We did launch the ability to get, I think, French birth and death certificates online. The experience is online, and you get the certificate in French. We do look at any new online service and you know, could we launch that in French and what's required for that, and considering the end-to-end experience. So that is something we are actively looking at, and you know, we certainly want ideally to have more services in French as possible. You know, we just have a big priority list and looking at volumes and you know, which thing we could do next that has the biggest bang, you know, it has the most impact for residents. So where possible, we do have services in French.
Thank you. One final question under 1.2.03, just to make sure heard it correct, the death notification project that was referred to in purchase of services, has that been completed?
So my understanding is the majority of the IT work has been completed. We are now moving on to staff training. So recently, in the last few weeks, I've written the regional health authorities asking for contacts just to facilitate training and like the person on the ground who's going to be leading it. So all that is underway. So we're in the kind of final, acceptance phase where now we're working on getting the staff trained so that everyone understands how to do the project, and the IT systems work is complete.
Thank you. And that's it for me, Chair.
Thank you. Clerk.
Executive and Support Services, 1.1.01 to 1.2.03 inclusive.
Shall 1.1.01 to 1.2.03 carry? All in favor?
Aye.
Contra minded? Motion carried.
Consult with MHA Reed.
Yep. MHA Reed?
I'm in favor.
Are you okay? You'll need to ask any questions or anything?
Nope. Okay. Good.
Get well soon. Next, we have Carp.
Regulatory Affairs, 2.1.01 to 2.2.04.
MHA O'Driscoll.
Okay, thank you. Just a couple of questions again. In 2020, we amended legislation to allow unlocking pensions. Do you have any update on how much was withdrawn from the pension funds in 21-22?
Sarah Studley. So we do have some information. I'm not sure if it's the amount. Just one second. Okay, sure.
Just a note, if your officials would like, you know, take down their mask when they're speaking,
yes,
it's fine.
So we have been monitoring the progress, and I think the initial report for a six-month period from, it was less than 6 months, from 1st of March to June 30th last year, there were 428 withdrawals, and then for the period July 1st to December 31st, there were another 336 withdrawals.
Okay, perfect. And can you provide some information, and these are in different sections, but I said I'd just get these questions out of the way and be able to move on. Can you provide some information on the number of complaints received last year in Consumer Affairs Division, and how many of them are related to the pricing of goods?
Okay. Let's see. I might have something on that, I think. Give me a second. Apologies. Sorry, I can't put my finger on that, but we can certainly get that for
you. Yeah, okay, no problem. And just related to that, you know, to costs and the rising costs and people, I'm going to say gouging, customers, I'm going to say, and I don't know if you call it gouging, but, you know, prices jump up extremely, extreme amount. They use lumber as an example, and they pay more. But, you know, there's, how do we track, I know that you get complaints that people are charging you more, and is there a need, and is there something that you can check to go against that? Do you know what I'm saying? That they might not be price gouging, but is there a way that we're checking to say that they're not?
Sarah Studley. So the wording of the legislation is around unconscionable acts, which could be potentially, you know, that was in before I came in, you know, so it's not as, I guess, helpful, I think, in, let's say, prosecuting someone who's charging more in one place and, you know. We do welcome anyone who feels like they've been impacted in that way to, you know, reach out to our office and make a complaint. The team, they do consider, like, the price of things in other similar locations. So if a price was $10 everywhere, and then that wouldn't necessarily be an unconscionable act. But if one place was charging, you know, 20, 30 times the same price as everyone else, then maybe that would be considered. And so we would work with the person making the complaint to try and, you know, get together as much documentation as we could, and we reach out to the supplier. I don't know if you wanted to add anything.
No, and you know, there's examples that people ask. I would use a simple one that one of my buddies is a plumber, and he did a hot water boilers, and they're $250. Now all of a sudden they're $500, and everybody blames it on COVID.
Yeah.
Is that actually the case, is what I'm trying to get at? You know, is it really the case? Because, you know, it wasn't last week he could go get one, next week he goes up, and he have charged more, obviously, because that's the price of it.
Yeah.
But is there any way to check against that? I don't know if there is, but, I mean, that's a question that certainly comes up.
Yeah. Right. Well, I guess, yeah, I certainly agree, and I know the cost of everything has been going up, and I've seen, you know, articles in the papers about, like, certain stores maybe charging more than inflation and more than what a supply chain markup would be. But I guess I go back to the legislation, which I didn't bring in, you know, is around unconscionable acts, and it is. You know, I'm not an expert on how one would prove something would be a unconscionable act. I would say that the price increases we've seen in Canada overall, generally, probably would not, if I had to guess, would not meet that threshold of unconscionable act. But, you know, we'd certainly welcome anyone to reach out to our department, and we would work with them on any complaints that they might have.
Yeah, we just hear it so often, based on COVID, and is it really the problem? You know, but anyway, that's I had a question on your tech system, and I know that it's antiquated and it's old. How much would a new, have you looked into seeing how much a new system would actually cost to get it where you want to be?
And this is, I guess, more of my OCIO hat. So because the Office of the Chief Information Officer would do that kind of RFP work around the systems. So I guess there's no issue with me providing more information on that with that hat on. But so we did do, maybe in the last year, a request for information, because we have four mainframe systems, and I think it was a request for information where we went out, or it could have been an RFQ, and we asked, you know, how would you approach, we went out to industry and said, how would you approach this problem? And we got a range of options from a range of vendors. In one of those, it was taking the code that we have and just rewriting it and plopping it onto a better, newer code base. And then we wouldn't get any more functionality, but we'd have a, you know, and really the problem, like, it's very stable. The problem is that no one, you know, so you can't hire coders that know how to code the mainframes. That's the problem. The security is not the problem. It's very stable. It's just no one knows how to use it. And there are other companies that have really old technology that pay more than government. In my last life, we had a mainframe system, and so they would pay more than what government would pay those same coders. So we have not yet decided exactly which road we're taking in terms of upgrading the systems. And it would depend on whether we did all four or just one of those. But I know the MRD, for example, is one of the bigger systems. And it would be, you know, at least, you know, depending on what you did, it could be $5 million, $20 million, you know.
It's a big range.
Small, yeah, I mean, to get absolutely no new functionality, like for like, you couldn't do it for less than $5 million, but I would, based on the information, and I don't have the exact numbers off the top of my head, but that, I guess that was a range. And then to do some, you know, and I personally am bothered by spending that money and coming up with exactly the same functionality. So then what does it cost to have a new system but purpose-built for what we actually need?
Yeah.
And that's not what we got prices on. So that's all still...
It's hard to put in a new system for a plate-to-vehicle or plate-to-owner. Just if that's the only reason you're going to do it, it would be hard to spend that much money if that was going to be the only change in your function, which I think is a big change.
Yep.
But, you know, I guess the other governments across Canada have different systems. So, you know, it would be hard just to do it or spend that kind of money just for that change. But I guess eventually it will come. So.
And I'll just respond to that. I'm with my OCRO hat on. We have looked at what other provinces have done, and most other provinces in that situation, they have done a like-for-like. So they pay and they pick it up and drop off the exact same functionality with just a new, better code.
Yep. Regarding MyGovNL yesterday and the issues that you had, are you considering, you did say that you're considering changing it. What would be the ramifications of changing if you did go and change?
Well, we haven't had the time. Really, the team's been fully focused on getting things back. So it is up at the moment. Well, not up. Like, what has happened is there's a problem with how many people can access it at a time. Even though before we launched, I asked very specific questions to the vendor about volume and peak volume, and they assured me that there would be no issues. I think, so my understanding is that's kind of the crux of the issue. So at the moment, there is a queue put in front of it. So if someone went on right now, they would be able to wait in line and do something with MyGovNL. In my understanding, my feeling is that is not fixed yet. So we have not put out a press release saying it is resolved, because it is not resolved. So we're looking at a range of options in terms of going back to the original, like what we had a few months ago, which is the same functionality. I guess it's been 4 days now, and I cannot tell you when the problem will be fixed, which is itself a huge problem. And I guess it's the biggest thing I'm working on when I'm not here in estimates. With the OCIO team.
All right, no problem, thank you. Just move on to 2.1.01 under regulatory affairs, under salaries. Last year's salaries came in under budget, but you earned 57,000. Can you outline why, and were the positions vacant, and how have you filled them?
Sure, thank you. So this is where we merged the two divisions for in advance of 2022-2023. So there were 8 positions that no longer exist, which then became 4 new positions created. So we didn't get rid of any people, just positions that changed. And then we moved a role to executive support. And then the extra savings we had from that, we are then moving to be an extra residential tenancy adjudicator position.
Hey, under purchase services, last year was over budget by 59.6. Can you explain that?
Absolutely. So as we move things online, we unfortunately incur additional Moneris fees. And those are fees like when you buy something on your credit card online. Moneris is the company that government has a contract with. That contract with the Moneris is with the Department of Finance. They are, my understanding is they're currently or soon to be in negotiation with them or are looking for a new provider. Our department has a strong interest in, you know, lower fees. At the moment, it's with the Department of Finance to negotiate, and there's very little we can do in terms of the extra costs that were charged to process fees online.
Okay, thank you. MHA Dean.
1.01 Consumer Financial Services. What is the current wait time to have a hearing at the Residential Tenancy Board, and what is the current case of waiting to be heard?
Sure. Just a second, Sarah Studley. So while I look that up, we recently hired our third residential adjudicator, so we have 3 of 3, and as I mentioned, we have moved resources so that we have... we're going to have a 4th residential tenancy adjudicator. It is a difficult role to fill, and it is a difficult job. Sorry, I need to better organize my binder here. Do you have that information? Okay, Sean, sorry.
Sean, Last year, the average wait time was 86 days, but so far in 2022, it's 43 days. And again, we are anticipating the hiring of an additional adjudicator this year so that we should be able to further reduce the wait time.
That is good news indeed for a lot of people I who call my office. That's excellent. I want to go back to with regards to the vacancies, and I think you talked about the like the people move in and move out or they apply for other jobs. Is that affecting services? Because after a while, like, there's no continuity and there's no passing on of, I guess, for lack of a better word, corporate knowledge or the learning, you know, them just in terms of someone who's I'm calling up one day, talking to a person, next day that person's moved on and I've got to start all over again. Is there any, and more importantly, is there any way then for that person to have a, sort of they pick up like a lesson plan, I guess. Well, here's what so far, and we're moving ahead with it.
Seriously, so I would say that the movement of people, particularly coming into the frontline roles in our department and then moving to other internal roles within government, is certainly a significant problem. Which certainly, you know, last summer when we saw the MRD issues, you know, that certainly was a huge contributor to that problem. We do have. Very sophisticated is the wrong word, but I guess like training programs and all that is quite standardized. We recently did kind of a lean review using some of our internal lean experts just to make sure that everything was as streamlined as possible. I don't know if you want to add anything. It is a big problem, and we do have training and stuff to.
Is it more of a problem for MRD? Than any other department, or is it like, or is it specific to a motor vehicle registration?
I'll let them add to it, but I do think that it is particularly for MRD because, well, any frontline service, right? If you go to an airport, there's a sign up saying, "Please be nice to people," you know, or mm-hmm. There's the customer service side where, you know, everyone in. People are generally a bit more agitated, maybe, and maybe not as nice and patient as the general public. But then there's also the challenge of hiring staff. And so, like, I know that across Canada, there are challenges hiring and retaining frontline workers to deal with the public. So we have those two issues coming together, plus the media attention, I'll be honest, that, you know, MRD might get doesn't make it better. You know, if they hear something on open line about MRD and then they walk in and things are not perfect, then no one's happy. The staff aren't happy, the residents aren't happy, and then
So we need to get more people in there permanently and make it attractive.
I mean, we try our best to bring as many people in as we can. We do have a team that handles calls. In the future, I'd like to see a team that helps via online chat. One benefit of having more things online allows people more time to deal with or help people in person, and like seniors who might not have, you know, access online, more time to sit down and handhold and just, you know, take care of people when they see them in person. You know, it is a problem, and there's no magic solution. Yeah. I don't know if anyone wants to add anything.
No, that's fine. That just sounds we acknowledge that. I know my colleague from Fairland mentioned about, I think, prices, I'll call it price gouging. So have there been any reports brought to the department accusing businesses of price gouging last year?
So we definitely would have had complaints. I don't have the numbers with me, but we'll certainly get those for you.
And I'd also, if there's been any, if there are any investigations and follow-ups or fines as a result, if there are results, that would be great.
Yep, we'll Thank happily you. Provide that.
2.1.02, pension benefits and standards. Salaries were under budget last year. What was the reason for that?
So salaries were lower. We had a vacant compliance officer position for a large portion of the year.
And that compliance officer would be dealing with what? How would that be, housing or?
Pension benefits.
Okay. Vacant. And 2.1.03, commercial registrations. Why did spending on salaries come in under budget last year?
2.1.03, salaries, okay. So the decrease reflects, so we had a vacancy in a clerk 4B and clerk 3 position throughout the year, and we just had delays in recruitment, so there was a decrease in 117,000.
And in the, under that same section, 2.1.03, purchase services, why did purchase services, the spending on that exceed the budgeted amount?
So that, we exceeded the budget there because of the Moneris fees, again, that we didn't anticipate. Higher debit and credit cards, because the what we pay for an online transaction is more expensive than what we pay for an in-person. So if you go in and use your chip and PIN on the machine, that's cheaper for government than if you pay online. So as we move more based on the current contract we have with Moneris that we are not involved in, that's how the pay rates go. So as we have more transactions online that require payment, the Moneris fees go up. And there's also a UNIS contract. It's not just Moneris. Moneris and UNIS's contracts.
Okay. We'll not have any further discussion about the cost-benefit analysis of online versus actually having real people do the, since we seem to be digitizing. I'm assuming you've done the analysis and that there's you're assuming you'll save money in the long run, but I guess with transaction fees, you don't have to worry about pension benefits and sick leave, too. You know what I'm saying? Like, if the Moneris fees are going up, would it be better to have people there?
Oh, I mean, sorry, Sean, yeah.
Hello? Sorry, hi, it's Sean. Again, we haven't eliminated any positions as a result of putting any services online. And, in terms of commercial registrations, we have one location on Elizabeth Avenue. So it is not convenient for most of the population to go to the office. And the number of offices we would have to staff in order to make that service more widely available. This is the most cost-effective way to make the service accessible to the majority of people. So, it is a cost that we have to absorb, but it helps make it more accessible. And the time it takes for someone to do that renewal online is a fraction of what it would take to have to get to the office and provide a wet signature or write a check or any of the other factors that would be involved in in-person service.
Thank you. Vital Statistics Registry. Why was spending on purchase services under budget last year?
So 2.2.01 Vital Statistics Purchase Services. So we had a reduction in the number of certificates purchased. Oh, yeah. So we had a registrar retire, and so the registrar's names are printed on the certificates. And so we didn't order as many as we usually would because we're trying to use up the certificates with the old registrar's name before we order new certificates with the new registrar's name. And we couldn't order too many with the old registrar's name on them because we knew they were retiring. That's why we spent less money.
Sounds good. It's efficient. Why were the under that 2.2.01? Why were the projections for federal and provincial revenue so far off the mark last year?
Sure. So we, I guess, our vital statistics division. We have systems where our system talks to SCATS Canada, talks to Service Canada, talks to CRA, talks to Elections Canada. And so as we share information with those, the federal government would compensate us for providing them records or information. So on the federal revenue, for example, we had higher than anticipated revenue for records that we provided to the federal government. And then provincial, we had lower than anticipated revenue for the secure shipment of birth certificates. The provincial revenue, we had a lower than expected revenue from shipping birth certificates to individuals.
Thank you. I can keep going.
No. Thinking how I was going to reply to that last email. Go ahead.
Just wait for the minister. Take your time. Yeah.
Thank you.
I did have one question. Queens Printer. They must print the budget, obviously.
Yes.
I was thinking about that last night. I said, where does it actually get printed?
They stay up all night.
Well, secrecy on it, too, so you can't go outside. So I started to think on that last night when you were talking about it. Under Queens Printer, a revenue provincial. You might have done that already, I think, did you? No, maybe not.
No.
Could you please provide an explanation of less than anticipated revenue last year?
Absolutely. So as more things, more people search and find information online, we print fewer things and we sell fewer things. So university libraries bought fewer books from us and they bought fewer copies of legislation from us.
Okay, I'll move on to 2.2.03. And under salaries last year was a savings of $70,000. Can you explain that?
So we had a vacant printing production worker position, and we did not need as much overtime as we had, allocated.
Okay. Under supplies, under the same section, last year there was a savings of $62,200. Can you explain that?
So we had lower printing requests. In particular, you know, we didn't have to print public exams. Because of COVID-19, and that was offset by a purchase of a replacement part for a printer.
And under purchase services, there's a savings of $15,500. Can you explain that, please?
So we had lower copying printing charges. So, like, this is, you know, a bulk of the printing for government. So if we're not printing as much, then we don't have as many costs. Okay.
Under 2.2.04, under salaries, there was a salary savings of $288,000. Can you explain that?
Yep. So this is due to vacancies and the delays in recruitment of collection officers.
All right. Under purchase services, under the same heading, it's also a savings of $21,800. I wonder if you could provide some detail on that.
Yep. So we had lower than anticipated legal costs associated with collections activity, and we had less collections efforts during COVID-19. Some of the collections team were reallocated to doing other things as were important to the government for COVID-19, so we did not do as much collections activity.
And can you give an overview how much is outstanding in terms of being owed to the government? How much was collected last year?
I don't have that information. Okay.
It's Sean. The year ending March 31st, the number of outstanding accounts was 86,000 for a total receivable for $743 million, but $58 million was collected.
Okay, and that's it for this section for me and that section. No, Jim, you got more.
MHA, Dean?
Actually, not many more. I think my colleague asked just about all of them. But I do have a question with regards to, with the online submission of expenses for MHAs.
It's horrible.
Yeah, okay, good. Good, I don't need to go further on that, except say that I know when I was with the NLTA CTF, you could submit things online, boom, done. Here it seems to be, do it online, print it off, sign it, bring. It seems to be like, is there any, would you have control over to upgrade or so that it can be done totally online and save this? It's a rather archaic process.
So I would be happy to have, you know, use OCIO engaged with the House of Assembly. I'm not sure who would, because I guess there's a process piece there that the House of Assembly would be involved in outlining, and then the OCIO would work with them on the technology. We can certainly get together and come up with, see if there's any way we can make that more streamlined. I guess from an overall government digital perspective, that impacts 40 people, and I agree it's very poor experience for someone. Yeah. So 40 MHAs and their 40 constituent assistants, so that's 80 people. I guess just to be a devil's advocate, I could have them spend time on things that would impact, that would improve the customer experience, resident experience of more than 80 people, you know? So it's like, then those are the types of things we think about when which service to do next. So, I mean, we can certainly do that, but then we're taking away from buildings, from improving something that impacts more than 80 people.
No, and I'm just saying in terms, I don't know what the cost is, but all I want to be able to do is, here's my, submit my line, put my digital signature, done, and be done with it. And
if I had to guess, and I'm pretty sure as an MHA I've asked this before, because it is very poor experience. They require a physical signature, but maybe one of our House of Assembly committees can take that further for, you know, and if that's no longer required, then we can certainly look at changing the process.
Okay, maybe that's a simpler fix. Question with the print plant. Do you actually have printing presses down there, or is it digitized now? Like, I thought they were with the dinosaurs, they're almost extinct. not the mimeograph.
I would imagine, this is Sarah, I know we do have digital printers. I imagine we also have printing press, but I don't know if Sean knows.
It's Sean. Like, these are Xerox-type quality machines, but they're for, you know, this kind of large-scale printing. It's not like a photocopier.
No.
But it's not a Gestetner machine either. So they have a variety of those machines. There's a saddle stitch binder, things you need to make public exams. All of that stuff is there, and I'm sure the director would be happy to offer any of you a tour anytime you'd like. They're in the basement of the East Block.
And my point was is that if it's like the, I know what the, it's an actual, what I'm thinking of is printing press. We had gone digital. It's not the photocopier. I understand that. I just want to know, like, is it gone to that level? We're not using the old printing, the printing presses where, you know, which we used to use in the NLT, and that's long gone. I just wanted to make sure.
Yeah, it's for making documents that require binding. So, you know, pamphlets, brochures.
Perfect.
You know, things that require staples in the middle. All of that sort of thing.
Thank you. That's it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we're ready to go to the next section, I think.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, just wondering. Clerk, can you recall the grouping?
Regulatory Affairs, 2.1.01 to 2.2.04, inclusive.
Shall 2.1.01 2.2.04 inclusive carry? All in favor?
Yes.
Those against? Motion carry.
Chair. MHA Reed.
MHA Reed?
Yes. Yeah. I'm in favor.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, next.
Digital Government and Services, 3.1.01 to 3.4.02, inclusive.
MHA O'Driscoll.
Thank you. Just a couple of questions. One is, have you ever considered, I know I came from the car industry, have you ever considered, just safety reason, motor vehicle inspections on vehicles after a certain age, say 5 years, 6 years, maybe seven. Seven is old, but I'm going to say 5 years, or depending on kilometers, because there's vehicles out there, and I know, and we all know that they're out there, and you don't ever see them until, you know, you see them going in with a, I've had mechanics, or not in where I work, but I've had garages that take pictures of vehicles with a voice grips on a brake line because that brake line is stopped, and there's no inspection until the brake pads need to be done, then they have to get into it. So just, I think it went out in John Effort's days, I think, and, you know, just something, I wonder if it ever came up in consideration, because it is a safety factor for sure in some of these vehicles.
Oh.
This was eliminated when Ernie McLean was the minister in the 1990s. We have occasionally gotten correspondence around the point that you raised, particularly from, you know, certain garages and that sort of thing. But I guess at the time, concern was that the inspections weren't overly effective. They were concerned about fraud and things of that nature. And I believe there's still an inspection required when the vehicle changes hands. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, no, you're right. Yeah. If you change ownership, for sure, you need an inspection. But like somebody buys a vehicle sometimes and keep it 10 years, you know, it's, sometimes they're not safe, as I'll say, but you know, something that, and when they're telling you that for a reason, because they're the ones that are fixing them, and they're shocked at the point that they are. So it's just something that I'd said I'd throw out there because, you know,
Well, if the PC caucus are supportive of that, we can certainly take it away, and well, I'm all for improving safety on our roadways.
Yeah. Well, you know, and the other side of that is when I asked that question, obviously, you know, we're talking about cost of living, and that affects the cost of living for those people as well. So, you know, it's a hard question to ask, but it's a safety question to ask. So, you know, that's why I'm asking it, right? All right, I'm good. Just go on to 3.1.01. Has you had anything else to add there? No? Okay. All right. 3.1.01 under salaries. Can you provide a breakdown of the number of employees in this division by region?
So this is Sarah. I don't have that to hand. I can certainly provide that. It doesn't look like we have that to hand. We can certainly provide that.
Okay. And under salaries, there's a substantial savings in this line item for 2021-22 of $801,000 was saved in salaries. Can you explain that?
Absolutely. So we had vacancies during the year in highway enforcement officers, clerical staff, a driver examiner, and manager positions throughout the province with MRD. And so those are impacted by high turnover and delays in recruitment.
Okay. Under supplies, last year went over budget by $119,000. Can you explain that one?
Absolutely. So we had kind of an addition and a subtraction here. So we purchased license plates for Come Home Year, and that was offset by a reduction in requirement for supplies and uniforms for highway enforcement officers and driver examiners due to vacancies.
All right, under purchased services, can you provide a breakdown of the services purchased and the amount of each? And additionally, why did the line item go over budget by $393,000?
Thank you. So on purchase services, we had higher debit credit card fees, so that was $373,000 worth due to greater volume of online transactions. We also had $10,500 worth of ergonomic assessments. You know, another thing is as we have a lot of staff coming in and going through, we have, you know, if people request ergonomic assessments, those are provided. And so, you know, the more staff we have coming through, the more ergonomic assessment costs we have. And then we did have $10,000 of charges for the insurance validation project, about $10,000.
Okay. Under grants and subsidies, can you provide a breakdown how and where these grants are awarded?
That was an excellent question that I'm going to refer to the team here.
Oh, hi, Bonnie Steele. Can you repeat the question, please?
Sure. Under grants and subsidies, can you provide a breakdown of how and where these grants are awarded? Yeah. That's under 3.1.01. Sorry.
Yeah, just getting there. This provides membership fees for the following, and also a $10,000 grant for safety and lids for kids program. So we provide money to Canadian Vehicle Safety Alliance, Canadian Council of Motor Transport, International Registration Plan, American Association of Motor Vehicle Administrators.
Okay.
And I have the amounts as well, sorry.
Sure,
Motor Transport Association is $10,200. Lids for Kids is $10,000. The CSUA membership is $10,200. And the American Association of Motor Vehicle Administrators is $2,300. And the international registration plan is
$9,800. Okay. Under revenue provincial, can you provide an explanation for the less than anticipated revenue last year? I would think it's all the same online.
Thank you.
Can you provide an update on how long someone needs to wait for an appointment at the various motor registration divisions then?
Sure. This is Sarah. I don't think it's that long at the moment. We have that. Okay. Thank you, Gail.
Gail Boland. I ran a report on April the 28th and across our office locations throughout the province. On average, it's only a 2 or 3 day wait for in-person services. The exception, of course, is road tests. In Mount Pearl, there is a wait. We do have a wait list started, and I'm working with staff now to identify a plan to address the current wait time to get that down to something that's reasonable.
How big a wait list is it? Like, is there?
Last week was about 60 people on the wait list.
How many do per day, roughly? I know it's a different change, isn't it?
Yeah, it changes every day, and depending upon is it a Class 5 license, is it a commercial license, is it a taxi license? So, for example, a Class 5 license takes about 30 minutes to do. A taxi license would take almost an hour to do. So it depends on the type.
Okay. I will say that I had a dealing with had an ATV that I when we went through the regulations had to be registered, and I bought it from my brother, and he never had it registered, so I had to go through the process. It was a real good process. Now, it took a month, but that's the process, because I didn't know if it was stolen. You didn't know if it was stolen, so you had to go through and check serial number, and it was a good process, and it did help it for sure.
Absolutely, and that is, sorry, this is Gail. That is something that we're looking into, especially with the new off-road vehicles legislation, and providing that service through MyGovNL.
Okay, I'll just add, so we do have an issue with people booking multiple driver tests, which does cause inefficiency, and we need to sort out some kind of solution, because we see someone who, they book one appointment here, they book one appointment in Harbor Grace, they book one appointment in Clarenville, they might book another one in Harbor Grace the next day. I would prefer not to charge for them, or I would prefer not to charge and have to rebate, but we do see some people. We had one, there were tens of driver tests booked, and someone then has to notice and cancel them, and that, you know, we're trying to solve that issue, but that does lead to our inefficiency in driver tests.
I guess with your antiquated system, it can't stop you from booking in all other motor registrations divisions, so it might, at some point in time, there might be another avenue for it to go, so. That's fine, but it was a good experience, I will say that.
Thank you. And
the other question would be, on ATVs, obviously legislation's coming down. I mean, you have people that have never registered an ATV. It's going to be a big problem. You're going to have enforcement. You're going to have, again, more cost to people. I just think that, you know, might be a little bit of leniency for the first time for could be an older gentleman in the community that had never registered and is driving in the, you know, in these out rural communities, I'll say that, you know, are driving sides of the roads or are going in cutting wood, that, you know, I haul them in and give them a ticket, that wouldn't be so good, but eventually has to get there, but maybe a warning to start.
I would just add that, I guess, the enforcement of the legislation would, rest in fisheries, forestry, and agriculture,
yes,
or with justice and public safety. I will say that there won't be, like, the new laws don't come into effect until May 19th, so anyone who's registered their vehicle in advance of that won't have any additional requirements. It's after May 19th.
Yeah, okay. And
I could just add, Sean, that the requirements for registration have not changed as a result of the law. So it's a long-standing requirement that, as you say, there's probably low compliance with. And the only place where that might have an impact on people is with respect to the training requirements. So they're not coming into force on May 19th, but at a later date once we have the training more widely available. And people will have to do the training if they are registering for the first time. So a long-time user who has not registered, this would be a good time for those listening out there to register your off-road vehicle.
Yeah, that's why I don't mind. So.
Can we say, Dean?
I'll start by saying I will agree with my colleague from Fairland about motor vehicle inspections, I think, after some date. New cars, if they're under warranty and they're brought back, but I think it's something to be considered, because down the road, look into how we can do it efficiently and cost effectively. The other thing I'm going to talk about is I've seen increasing number of cars that have tinted glass all around, and I don't know if there's a way of having that, just as it's illegal to remove a catalytic converter, that it should be
illegal.
So where they're getting it done somewhere, and it's not just simply someone buying the film and putting it on there. You can see it looks professionally done, but from my point of view, I should be able to see the driver of a car, especially if I'm a pedestrian. I want to be able to see their eyes, and if they're coming, I want to be able to see. So I don't know if there's a way of cracking down on that, but that's going to be something.
I will say it's illegal to have the windows tinted, at the driver and above in front.
Yeah.
I'll certainly raise that in my next discussion with the Minister of Justice and Public Safety. Illegal.
I see more and more of them coming in. And the other one, I'm just wondering, I do cycle to work. Part of the most dangerous part is coming up on Prince Philip Drive there. And as someone who lost a brother to a cycling accident, I'll say this.
A lot of cars will follow the one, they'll slow down and move out 3 feet. Not everyone does. I'm just wondering, as a little, maybe a fun or a positive, proactive way, like, we have to renew our licenses every year. Maybe it's time to put a little quiz that make it a fun that, hey, complete this quiz. As you're entered into, you know, maybe you'll get a free motor vehicle registration for a year if your name is drawn, or you get an iPad or whatever else. But each year as a way of, hey, did you know? And so what do you do when you come to a crosswalk? So it just to remind people, because bad habits get ingrained over years. You don't even know it. So even I know I'm far from it, just as a thought. But especially if we're going digital online right now, it's just a matter of, here, click on this and go from there. How many highway enforcement officers are currently employed by the department under the highway safety program?
I'll defer to Gail.
This is Gail Boland. There are currently 13 highway enforcement officers employed throughout the province. We do have some vacancies there that we are currently actively recruiting.
Okay, and how many vacancies would that be?
We have five positions currently under recruitment, and we have two positions that are inactive due to extended leave.
Okay, but they are replaced, so are they?
Yes.
Okay. And where would those five vacancies be, across the province, or are they?
Yeah, they're across the province.
Okay. Thank you. And provincial revenues were less than anticipated last year because of a...
If we're still 3.1.01.
Yes, we are.
Yep.
Yeah.
That is, we had fewer requests for expedited delivery of driver's license cards.
No one was driving. Probably it too.
People didn't lose their license. They weren't traveling. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. No one. The budget for salaries increased this year and under 3.2.01 support services. By the way, out of curiosity, I don't know if it's under your jurisdiction or not, probably not, with the advent of driverless cars, any discussion within your department or between departments as to how that's going to be as the future unrolls?
So the Canadian Council for Motor Transportation, CCMT, along with the federal government, so we kind of have an agreement. So the federal government has set standards for driverless cars, and I guess it's currently in like a test and learn phase, if I would call it that off the top of my head. So there is documentation online available we can certainly share with you. So the federal government has set standards for what is appropriate and what is not appropriate, and at the moment we're still, I guess all provinces are evaluating that, and Transport Canada ultimately has ownership for driverless cars and the safety. So they're responsible for like the cybersecurity and the privacy and all those considerations. And I guess we're working with Transport Canada then in terms of how that trickles down into the provincial regulations.
And would there be any discussion between you and whether it's your department or an insurance companies as to insurance rates? So for right now, if I were living over in Port au Choix, for example, my premiums would probably be half of what I'm paying here. But because I'm in a high risk zone, I'm just wondering if there's any discussion as to what that would mean.
Sure. So that is under us, under our financial services division. So insurance rates, the Public Utilities Board regulates insurance rates, and the Public Utilities Board legislation is under Justice and Public Safety. So in the upcoming Justice and Public Safety review of the Public Utilities Board, we'll include a high-level, somewhat look at insurance, I guess. Okay. We do have a mandatory insurance review every 5 years. I think we're 2 or 3 years in at the moment. So if an insurer, like insurers, have to apply to the Public Utilities Board for a rate increase, and there's formulas around that, and the Public Utilities Board has to approve those rate increases.
I was just curious as to how autonomous vehicles might affect that down the road as well. Under 3.2.01, support services, the budget for salaries has increased this year. What was the reason for that?
So we're talking with 3.2.01 support services salaries. Yep. So we had, I guess it reflects the salary plan. We had two previously unfunded positions, and now the government step salary increases.
Okay. Why was the budget for purchase services decreased this year? It went from 64 to 62 in the, and then on to 49.1.
Sure. So in our Gander location, we no longer need to pay for secure cash services. We no longer need to pay an armored vehicle to pick up cash because our office is now next to the bank. Something like it's in physical.
It's in the same mall.
In the same mall. So we no longer need the protective cash services.
Well, you can always call on me and the member for Fairland. We'll be glad to deliver cash for you. Why was the provincial revenue less than anticipated last year?
So we had fewer inspections carried out.
Thank you. And 3.2.02, regional services. Given the move to digitizing services, are there any plans to close some local offices and consolidate services in the remaining branch offices?
This is Sarah. So we have no plans to close branches. No,
thank you. And under 3.2.01, salaries, it was under budget. Why was that the case for last year?
So is it 3.2.02?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Salaries. So we had vacancies throughout the province, delays in recruitment. We had environmental health officer vacancies, environmental protection officer, regional support supervisor, and a word processing, so a clerk role vacant.
Perfect. And under 3.2.02, regional services, provincial revenue was less than expected last year. This year, we're expecting to collect only half the amount that was budgeted last year. Why is that so? Why is that the case?
This is related to how we, from an accounting perspective, the difference between if someone pays for a permit online versus in person. So fewer permits sold over the counter, they're recorded as related revenue, whereas a permit sold online goes to the consolidated revenue fund.
So it just go two different.
Yeah.
Okay, that's different. 3.3.01, occupational health and safety inspections. How many inspections were completed last year, and how many investigations into workplaces were conducted last year as well?
Okay. I'll defer that to Gail.
Gail Boland. So in 2021, we completed 4,096 inspections.
And any that's any investigations into workplaces, or is that would that be part of that as well?
That would be part of that. Let me just check here. In 2021, we concluded 11 prosecutions. Currently, we have four ongoing fatality investigations, two that started in 2020, one in 2021, and one in 2022.
Thank
and
you.
We have lost many ongoing investigations.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay.
You notice, Paul, I'm not taking advantage of you.
I noticed that. There's a reason for that. MHA O'Driscoll.
Thank you. I'll just go back to the previous one, 3.2.01. I just have one question on transportation and communication. Last year, there was a savings of 57.7. Just wonder if you could explain that.
Sure. So 3.2.02?
Yeah. No, okay. 3.2.01 for transportation and communications.
Okay. Apologies. Just a second. We had fewer travel costs for inspection services, which is why we had the reduced, we didn't spend what we had budgeted.
And under 3.2.02, transportation and communications as well was 44.1. I just wanted to explain that one.
So under transportation communications and 3.2.02, we had the same again, lower travel costs related with inspections.
Okay. Just a couple of questions, and I know that the member there had asked earlier on insurance. I think you were speaking about it. So when you buy a vehicle, obviously you get a loan on it. So the insurance before you take it, the dealerships will call the insurance company, get the policy number, make sure they got it before the vehicle leaves. So somebody pays cash for a vehicle. Is that what you're trying to get, that if somebody pays cash for a vehicle, say $10,000 or $5,000, they go and get it insured, put the insurance on it, public liability, then they go cancel it? Is that what you're trying to track in regards to insurance on vehicles?
So I guess in terms of the insurance validation project, is that what you're referring to?
Yeah.
So it's important that insurance companies let us know when someone's canceled their insurance, because obviously public liability insurance is mandatory, and so we would cancel their registrations if they canceled insurance, and so then we can't have drivers driving around without any public liability insurance.
A bank, if you're... Here's something to...
When we did the auto insurance review, that was one of the issues that came up in our Engage NL survey and our discussions with insurers and other stakeholders. And the concern was that people could go online and they could list a policy number in order to get their registration for the year and then cancel their policy. And we didn't have any feedback loop to find out when those sorts of things occurred. And to do a paper-based process to have hundreds of thousands of people send in their insurance information wasn't really practical. So that's why the electronic solution was devised. So we get real-time data when people canceled a policy. And then you would be able to connect that with law enforcement. So we're, at the very late stages of completing the project. We just need to ensure that we have a secure means for transfer of the information between the Insurance Bureau and their members and the registrar.
Like, I know with the bank is looking after their interest, right? I keep saying mortgage. When you get a loan for a car and you call out and you're going to change insurance companies, so for an example, as soon as the bank knows that you're changing insurance, the insurance company will notify the bank if somebody tries to change the insurance. Mm-hmm. Right, so then the bank will get after that person to get insurance. But I'm thinking on a vehicle that doesn't have a loan on it, there's nothing tied to it. They're the ones that we got to be careful with that. Because you could buy a car off me today, cancel it, you go get public liability, you go cancel it. Are they calling you to say that the insurance is gone? That's the ones that get you in trouble, not the other ones, right?
So at the moment... Okay. At the moment, they would not be able to renew their insurance, so we would find out at time of renewal, because you need an active policy, insurance policy, to renew your vehicle. But with this new project, then the insurance companies would tell us when someone canceled, and then we would then look at whether or not it was appropriate to cancel their vehicle registration.
Just trying to be clear, because, like I said, I'll go get insurance today, and the vehicle has not got no loan attached to it, all right? So go get the insurance, get the policy number, register the car, and then go cancel the insurance. That's what you're trying to prevent,
yes.
And that is going to happen. So that's good. There's lots of times that happened, and when we sold cars, if you bought a car for cash, that was up to you if you put insurance on it. Now, if you had a loan on it, we had to make sure. Now, if you left a lot and didn't have insurance in place, because we do an online one, but... you'd have to make sure that it was done on a loan. But on the other one, if you left a lot and wrote off $10,000 car, well, that's your loss because you didn't have it on it, right? But hopefully that's changing.
But it is the law to have public liability insurance,
yeah.
Right? So
yeah.
We're not. So this would be an extra measure. But it is the driver's responsibility to follow the law of owning a vehicle.
Same thing could be said for house insurance if people lose their
house. It's not mandatory to have house insurance.
No, but I'm saying the same thing could be said if you. House insurance is something that should be mandatory. You would think that, people haven't been burned on their house and then, it's gone. So anyway,
but it's illegal. If you got pulled over without insurance, you'd get a ticket.
Yes.
It's
illegal absolutely.
Not to have public liability car insurance. Yeah.
Well, that's where your $30,000 to $40,000 people that got these fines, that you can never get to the end. They bought a car, cancel insurance, get caught, they don't care, and they go do it again. So
that's just anyway, public safety.
Yeah, but you're trying to get to it, so I see that. So okay. I see that point. Under 3.3.01, under salaries last year, there was a savings of 766,000 in salaries. Can you explain that?
So we had a vacancy for a hygienist and an occupational health and safety officer positions throughout the year, and then the delays of recruitment.
We also had similar savings last year in the same estimate, so I'm just wondering, is that, you know, have the same positions been vacant for that period of time?
I'm not sure.
It's Sean. They're not all the same every year, and some of it is that, you know, we'll hire people, let's say, in our Labrador West office. They may be there for a few years, and then they compete for a job in Corner Brook or Grand Falls, and then there's a turnover. So that's one of the types of situations we're dealing with today. And we're also looking at doing some internal review around the resources required for the investigations. And we were talking about that a little bit earlier, but you know, we do have a number of investigations around serious incidents that go on. They're very time consuming and require a lot of specialized skills. So we're also, you know, taking a look at, are there things we can do to help ensure we have the right skill sets to support our OSH officers when it goes from the inspection into the investigation stage.
Okay, under 3.3.01, transportation communications, last year there was a savings, 135,000. I wonder if you could explain that.
So the decrease reflects a savings in travel costs associated with occupational health and safety accident investigations.
Okay, and under supplies, this year budget for supplies has been increased. Can you give some commentary on that, please?
Sure. So we looked at the budget required for all of our occupational health and safety subscriptions and publications, the CSA standards, Journal of Occupational Health and Environmental Hygiene, Occupational Health and Safety Insider, and the Newfoundland portion towards the development of CSA standards, and you know, we needed an extra $7,200.
Under purchase services, can you explain what services are included here and what explains last year's savings?
Sure. So the savings, we had a reduction in-person training and radiology services. We had a lower requirement for witness fees and experts when we're looking at securing accident scenes. And so if you just purchase services. So this would include advertising, vehicle repairs and maintenance, equipment rentals, meeting rooms, lease office space, Corner Brook, Grand Falls, Windsor, Wildbush, and St. John's. Maintenance and analysis of hygiene samples, implementation of professional development for staff, and training.
Okay. Under revenue provincial, how is that revenue generated? And can you provide an explanation for the less than anticipated revenue last year? And a note that last year when we were in this, I asked the same question, is there a pattern here or is it COVID a part of that problem?
Sure. So the revenue we get is because all occupational health and safety expenses are recovered from Workplace NL, which are recovered from the Workplace Injury Fund. So essentially, employers pay a fee to Workplace NL, and that goes into a fund, and then that pays for all the occupational health and safety costs that we have. So the more costs we have, the more they pay, essentially. So when our costs go down, they pay less.
Perfect. Under 3.4.02, under grants, can you explain the outline the purpose of this $8,000? Looks like only $2,500 was spent last year.
3.4.02?
Yep.
Okay.
Jim.
Just a second. Thank you. So these are grants to safety organizations. So Newfoundland Outdoor Occupational Health and Safety Association, the Canadian Society of Safety Engineering, Safety Services, Newfoundland Labrador, Canadian Standards Association, Newfoundland Labrador Employers Council, NAOSH, Newfoundland Labrador Construction Safety Association, Newfoundland Labrador Federation of Labor, and Safety Net.
Okay, and I only got one more question in that section,
ahead,
So and then that'll be done. Revenue provincial, can you please outline where this revenue comes from?
Go with that, Jim.
So this is just revenue, I get, and Workplace NL, this is what Workplace NL pays us. So we give out the grants and then Workplace NL pays us back.
Okay. Perfect.
Thank you. MHA, Dean.
The insurance, I think, is a great idea. Like, in terms of when, you know, when people, if it's canceled and it's the registration is void, but how do you enforce it in terms of, I guess, it's like a locked door, like doors, a lock on locks and doors, really, they're for honest people. So how do you make sure that the person's not actually out driving around the car anyway? Or are you hoping that, or is it going to be a chance that the guest report or the police happen to be behind the person? Or are they notified? Are they notified then? You're just want to let you know you need a response. Are you aware that your insurance has been canceled, you need to renew? Or are you then going to escalate it to the point we'll put a boot on your car until you get the proper insurance? I'm just curious how that works enforcement-wise.
So I guess once the project is live, we will be notified then that someone's canceled their insurance, and we can cross-reference that with when their vehicle is renewed, and then we would just pass that information on to law enforcement and work with them on the execution and the operationalization of that.
Excellent. And maybe that'll save us some money too in terms of fines and that as well. Under 3.3.01, how many inspectors are currently employed by the department in total? I think you said, that was something else. But how many inspectors will be employed there under OHS?
This is Gail Boland. So just focusing on our main inspectors, so our occupational health and safety, like two inspectors, we have lots of different types of positions. But in Labrador, we have one currently. We're recruiting for another. In Grand Falls, Windsor, we have three occupational health and safety officers. In Corner Brook, we have five. And in the metro area, we have 14.
Thank you. And I'm trying to figure out if this one was asked. With regard to 3.3.01, spending on supplies, professional services was lower than budget last year. Why was the money not spent, the allocated money not spent?
Sarah, okay, thank you. So we had lower than anticipated, in terms of supplies, lower than anticipated requirement for uniforms, PPE, and field supplies. And then under professional services, we had less than anticipated need for witness fees and bringing in experts in relating to accident scenes.
Thank you. 3.4.01, how many dependents are currently receiving assistance through this program? Last year it was 40, the year before it was 43.
31.
Oh. That's it for the question. One last thing, it was brought up in the House of Assembly, but in these estimates, there seem to be an awful lot of vacancies. It's throughout. Is there a problem with? I guess does government have a good name for? I'm just trying to get an under as to why there seem to be so many vacancies, because there's a certain level of job security, or have you done any analysis as to why? There are a lot of Newfoundlanders and Labradorians and immigrants who would certainly be able to fill these positions, I figure, but I'm just trying to get an idea of what have you done an analysis as to why there seem to be so many you can talk to your cabinet colleagues as to what the rationale is here, or what's going behind it.
I guess just from my perspective, there would be, when someone leaves a job, there's the timeline associated with, we may or may not know in advance whether they're going to leave, and then the internal process, work with HR to go through the system, and then I see it at a certain point, and then the time to, post the job and all that to happen, and then we can't do all of those at once, so we prioritize at any given time which ones have priority. I'll let Sean or Sean.
I guess I could add, though, that if you look at data from Statistics Canada and Atlantic Provinces Economic Council, like there is a higher rate of vacancy across the economy and all employers, so it's not that we're having a unique problem. There are some jobs that are harder to fill because they're very specialized skill sets. So anybody listening out there who's qualified to be an elevating devices inspector, we will hire that person to work in any part of the province. The location is negotiable. You know, we are working to try to address those types of challenges. And I guess in terms of the turnover, we are also looking at where we can try to shorten the time frames on the processing of some of the back office work, like a request for staffing action approval, to try to shorten those time frames as well. You know, there's been a lot of discussion globally about, you know, the great resignation and those sorts of things. And I don't know if that's indicative of, you know, people not being as interested in work that's not, you know, completely in their niche and finding other things to do. But, you know, certainly we do have opportunities. We're posting them on the jobs site for the provincial government on the main page, and it would certainly encourage people interested that we have a number of openings in our various offices throughout the province.
Thank you. That's it for me, Chair. There you go, Brian.
MHA O'Driscoll.
I just got a couple of small questions there. Just under the insurance again. So somebody has a motorcycle, and they got to be registered, obviously. So when they park that in the shed and don't use it no more, because they're only using it, say, for the summer months, they cancel their insurance. It's in there stored away. So how will that work? So that's something I'm just going to say, Director. How will that work? Yeah.
Well, I guess this is with my... Sarah, with my insurance industry hat on, generally I think people don't take the public liability insurance off, they take the other insurance off. So if the vehicle is still roadworthy, then we, like the vehicle is registered for the year, and at least from my experience, people in those situations, they keep the insurance on, they just remove like the bodily injury, the, all that kind of stuff to save money, so they only pay the minimum while their car is in the garage, and then they call their insurance company back to say, okay, I'm going to drive it again, and they add the other insurances on.
Yes.
Yeah. So they don't cancel public liability.
I'm going to say some people will, like on a motorcycle as an example, or I wouldn't think on a car because, you know, just if you're putting a store in the way, it'd be in your house or in your garage or wherever, but like on a motorcycle, I would think they just flat out cancel it and for 6 months, right? So just, you don't want police showing up at their house and saying, well, you haven't got your bike insured, but they're only driving in 6 months. So.
Well, in my the church company I work for, we wouldn't do that. We wouldn't cancel, we wouldn't allow them to do that.
No? Okay. And I will go back to the member from St. John's Centre on tinted windows. Most of that is about enforcement and some of these side garages that are doing it. And I agree with them. Like sometimes you can't see anything in through these side windows or front windows, but that's about enforcement. And if the police see them, they'll certainly. One other thing I'll touch on is seniors in your. I know you're trying to get most of this stuff online. Just have to keep in mind that not all seniors are able to do it. I'm sure it's never going to be shut down totally, I wouldn't think. No. No. And just want to throw that out there, because that was some of the questions I think we asked last year when it started. Before I finish, and I'm done with my questions, I'd like to thank everybody on the other side there for all the departments, for all your work, and been so cordial in answering all the questions. And I'm sure it's a tough job to get this done in this time of the year. And there's a lot of work involved, I'm sure. You know, the months before this budget comes out, all the work had to be done. So thank you again.
Thank you.
And, my colleague can say thank you for your work. I know when it comes to registering for vehicles or anything, it can be a frustrating experience. But I will say that for the most part, my wife and I, we tend to do a lot of that online, and it does work effectively for those who are competent. But I will echo what my colleague from Fairland says. For a lot of seniors, it's a problem, and it's a problem also if they go to, as my our case, where my mother and mother-in-law might come to us, and yet they have to have an email. They may not have any. There's got to be some way that allows family members who are able to help them to do that without having to go through that that extra layer. So it can work. It's just a matter of making it less frustrating for people, and they'll do it.
So on our, from a MyGovNL perspective, on the list of things we want to do is to allow someone to have like a designated person to do things on their behalf. So that, I don't have a timeline on that, but that is one of the next highest priority things, and that would be for motor vehicle registration and MCP and that kind of stuff as well.
Okay.
Oh, not even a question. It's not even a question, but I will say, when you know, when you're dealing with the public, you know, that lots of times when they go to your counter, they're the ones that don't have the information. It's not the people behind the counter, and they give you the frustration. So I do, you know, you're working in there. You know, I have to tell them to stay with it. I know working in the service injury is always the person on the counter's fault. It's not someone else. So pass that on, that, you know, I've been there, done that, and it's pretty frustrating. But you're only following the rules, so that's where it's due. They don't have the information. But again, thank you, and thanks for all your work.
Okay, I ask the clerk to call the grouping.
Digital Government and Services, 3.1.01 to 3.4.02 inclusive.
Shall 3.1.01 to 3.4.02 inclusive carry? All in favor?
Aye.
Against? Mr. Reed?
In favor.
MHA Reed, I should have said. Okay, thank you. Clerk?
The total?
Shall the total carry? All in favor?
Aye.
Those against? Carried. Shall I report? Oh, sorry. MHA Reed?
Yes, I'm in favor as well.
Okay. Shall I report the estimates of the Department of Digital Government and Service NL? All in favor?
Aye.
Those against? Carried. Just like to thank our officials and our members for being here. Oh, sorry. Sorry, MHA Reed. You got to.
I'm in favor as well.
Okay. Keep forgetting you. Used to sitting by you too, right? So anyways, just like to ask the, again, thank you to the officials, thank you to the members. But just like to ask the minister if she'd like some final remarks.
Sure, thank you very much. So I do say we have a, you know, very hardworking, diverse team across the province. I've spent some time with some of our occupational health officers across the province, some of our you know, highway enforcement officers. They are certainly very passionate and knowledgeable and experts in their field. And you know, in our department, we have a range of experts in a huge, a very, very wide variety of topics. And so I do thank our leadership team and our executive team, because they have also had to become experts on a huge, you know, a wide range of topics. And I know it adds the complexity because we have the most, I think, legislation of any department. But we also then deliver the customer service side. And those are very different skill sets, I think, you know, working on policy and legislation and then also the customer service side. So, it, you know, I know it is a bit tricky. You know, we have a very hardworking, very, you know, a lot of really smart people in our teams. So I just thank them for their hard work and thank you for asking these very important questions. And I, you know, I think this is an important part of the process for people, the public, see how we're spending their hard-earned money. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Minister. I'd like to have a motion for adjournment. Moved by MHA Stoyles. Call for vote. All those in favor? Okay. Thank you all so much.